everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. And be sure to check out our blog and our YouTube channel and our newsletter and our great sponsors, your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And my guest today is Arnie Aranci. And so welcome, Arnie. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here.
So I usually, usually start out with, a very simple question. You know, where is your family from in Italy and when did they arrive?
My father's side is from Arezzo, and it's actually from a little like a suburb of there. It's actually in the countryside called Foiana della Chiana, really tiny. And my mother is from Livorno, major seaport there on the west coast. My father came here as a little boy, maybe 3 or 4 years old, probably in, let me think, I don't want to take too long to do the math. It was probably in the 20s. He grew up here in Hamden, Connecticut, just outside New Haven, went back to Italy with the American army, pushing the Nazis out of Italy, worked his way up the peninsula. And when he got to Livorno, he came down with malaria, and he ended up being stationed, sort of permanently at a base they set up there as the army made its way up farther on. That's where he met my mother. She was a local girl who whose cousin was working at the army base. They had local Italian girls working there. When he would drive home, my mom's aunt, he would see my mom, and eventually they got to know each other, and they ended up getting married there in Italy, and he shipped out with the Americans when they all came home, and she came over on a ship full of war brides right after the war.
Wow, that's so interesting. So I think you're the first person whose mom was an American war bride. I have a good friend in England, and his mom was a war bride, but his dad was in England. So, and a similar kind of story, he came back and did that, but I didn't realize that they had a ship specifically for war brides to come back.
Any ships. My research for my book, I was fascinated. Thousands of war brides there really were. And I forget the operation name. They had a name for it too, that the War Department had. Where just many of these ships that were, converted from, whatever they might be, passenger liners, troops ships, they had many of these ships coming over full of war brides. As a matter of fact, we had a little clipping somewhere in our things, war brides arrived in New York, the ship that my mom was on. So yeah, there was quite an operation there, all these war brides. I didn't realize so many American GIs married girls over there.
Yeah, I didn't either. So did they ever explain, was it difficult for them to get married? Did they have to go through a lot of stuff to get to marry her in Italy?
They never told me anything like that, but looking at reading some of the other little stories that people posted online, because I did some research about, how did these people get married? It didn't take too much, like permission from your commanding officer and a couple of papers and that was it.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. I would have thought it would have been much more difficult. I've seen a couple of movies, not so much about Italy, but about Japan, and it seemed to be difficult in Japan if you wanted to marry. But I suppose that was a different situation. Who knows how they did that kind of stuff. Do you know what your I'm going to start with your mom's family because she lived there. Do you know what her father did or what her background is?
Really interesting. He worked with a lot at scrap metal places, but during the wars, and as a matter of fact, even in between, he did salvage diving, with the big helmet and the whole thing. And I have pictures of him sitting, on the deck with some of his friends, and they got their stuff on. They're holding their helmets and, so yeah, they would go down and pump air into the, ships and try to raise them and things like that. So I always thought when I was a kid, I always thought that would be so cool to do,
Yeah, that is cool. I didn't even realize they were doing it back then. But not that way, that they were actually, raising the ships. I know they do it now. Yeah, that's a line of work I haven't heard from Italy yet.
Farmer, artisan, or something.
Right. Or, the farmer. Yeah, right. And how about your dad's family? You know what their industry was or occupation?
No, I really didn't ask my dad about that, and his father died young. Matter of fact, that was one of the things during the Depression. My parents were older. My father was 50 when he had me, so he pretty much was supporting his family. That was it, eighth grade, and he was out working, and he didn't tell me too much about his dad, so I didn't know him, so I couldn't really speak to that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, but since I didn't want to get too personal, but since you brought it up, I was saying, yeah, Arnie looks pretty young to have a dad the same age as my dad.
Yeah, so they were both old, and my mother was 10 years younger. So she had me when she was 40, and I'm 14 years older, I mean, younger than my sister. So I was either a surprise or, I'm a little surprise package there in their, later years.
Well, I think my dad was too, because his sister was his next up sister was, I think, 7 years difference, which isn't a big deal. But his oldest brother was much, much older than him, like 18, 19 years, 20 years, or something like that. My mom's family, my grandmother was like pregnant every 2 years, 18 months, or something like that. She had 11. My dad had five. So, big difference there.
Yeah.
So what did your dad do after he came back from the war?
Well, he was a baker. He was a baker before the war, baker after the war, and always worked at little shops and just, wage earning baker.
And how'd you stay so thin? Your father was a baker.
I was a chunky little guy because my mom cooked great stuff and my father, came home with the baked goods and, wasn't until I was a teenager that I said, I think I'm going to try to stretch out a little. Oh, I think my body just stretched out. I shot up. I'm tall, like 6'2". So I think I stretched out a little.
My uncle was a baker in Corona, it's funny because I didn't know this. I knew they made pizza there, but I was able to get the recipe from the nephew of the owner of the bakery to get the pizza recipe. This is like 50, 60 years after my uncle was making pizzas, I was able to get the recipe. And I only got it because the guy promised he would never give it away to anybody but the family. And he said, well, I have to give it to you because your uncle was baking it, Did he work at a big bakery or just worked at a local place or?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Couple of jobs that he had. One of them was just at a small little bakery. That was, it was small. But then once or twice he had a job at one of the, it was called Grand Way back then, sort of a stop and shop. So he was in in the bakery department there too.
And so now, did they originally in Connecticut, or did they, go from New York to Connecticut, or what was their migration path?
Much straight to New Haven, my father's family, and he grew up here in Hamden. And after the war, when he was married, they stayed here in Hamden, as I have too.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize that there's a big Italian community in New Haven, right? Or
New Haven,
was.
heard of New Haven pizza, pretty famous around it. They get great ratings. Matter of fact, Pepe's. Here in New Haven, on the wall, they have all pictures of the stars that have been there, Frank Sinatra and whatnot, who come to New Haven after they've, been in New York or wherever.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that. I didn't know that at all. So Now, have you what kind of research have you done with the family, and have you done DNA and things like that?
No, I have not done DNA, and I contacted and I as you may have read on the back of the book, I do stay in touch with my family in Italy quite a bit. On my mother's side, I have a cousin who I used to spend summers with her family, and we're very close. And but on my father's side, as far as tracing that back, I contacted his family. Talked to some of the relatives, and they tried going back. And it reached a dead end with my father's father because he had been an orphan, and the orphanage where the records were burnt down. And so that was kind of a dead end. But I haven't really put a great deal of effort into trying to, trace. And I know your site is a genealogy, and maybe I'll start down that path next. But at this point, I was just writing the book.
Well, the interesting thing about doing the DNA, you'd probably be able to find out if you did it, because you would probably wind up, finding some second cousins or third cousins who might know the story or know where you're from. I know several people who have done that, and that's how they found their roots. In fact, the interview I just did was really interesting because I didn't know who her father was. And she used to walk through the streets of East Harlem in New York, trying to find people that looked like him, because she knew that he was from that, from the neighborhood. But yeah, it's so many people have found people like that, through that path.
That
And
they didn't even know that they had half brother and half sister met each other. They were both here in America, and it turned out they had so many similar traits. They were both into music. They both were performers. It's amazing. And then I saw them perform together. So things can happen when you do that.
Well, yeah, and I have a good friend who found his older brother that he never knew existed. The father never talked about it. He believes that the father had the affair before he married his mother. And back then, we're talking 70 years ago. Back then, they would just hand the kids off sometime. There was no paperwork. I have another friend. She has no paperwork. She doesn't know how she wound up in the parents' hands.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, and she thinks that her father, similar situation, some young girl was having a baby, her parents couldn't have children, and they just gave them the baby, because she didn't have a birth certificate.
Wow. Yeah, it's very different from nowadays.
Oh, much, much different. My kids are adopted, and it's much different. They're checking you out all the time, for every little thing, which of course is fine. It's fair enough to do that, but yeah, I think in my friend's case, his brother was just handed off to a couple, and that was the end of it. So what's the book about? Let's talk about the book a little bit.
Okay. Now that you know a little bit about my mom, you'll see how this was inspired by them, but it's very loosely based on them because it's quite a drama and a story of survival, which is definitely her story too. But the book, it's about a girl, 19-ish, growing up in Livorno. So, I tried to use a lot of the things that I had experienced and I had seen from, my summers there and my and a lot of the things from my mom's story too. But again, it's definitely a fiction. But the girl is growing up there or she's trying to survive there in Livorno, which is occupied by the Germans at the time. And the Americans and the British are bombing the heck out of it. It's one of the most bombed cities in Europe, certainly in Italy. And because it was a commercial port and it was very vital to the Germans to bring in their supply. So she's trying to survive there, and the Germans loot her home. Which there's actually a little story in there about that actually happened to my mom about, first of all, the bombings that she used to describe, sky being black with planes, the Americans or the British planes. It's just they came over, in waves, she would tell me. These are like the direct stories from her. And, running to bomb shelters and trying to survive and telling me about the rats. She couldn't look at squirrels here in America. And I said, why? She said, because they remind me of the rats in the bomb shelters, you know. So it's amazing, these like connections, and the PTSD kind of thing, you know. And the Germans loot this, the protagonist, Nicola, who I named after my mom, Nicola. And the Germans loot her home. They take her sewing machine. And now, you know, she's a seamstress. She, you know, so now they're really hard up. And she finds work with a countess on Montenero, which is in Livorno, but it's a hill, you know. So Livorno's, it's beautiful about Livorno. You could be right down on the ocean and you can go up in the hills. And it's beautiful up there, beautiful views. And so she has a villa up in Montenero. So she works for her, and her chauffeur brings her Nicola back and forth to her home. And while she's there, of course, I had to put some romance in there. The Contessa's grandson, about Nicola's age, you know, falls in love with her. But Nicola has a boyfriend who's in the army, and so you know, she's pining for him, and she's trying to not get involved with this other fellow. And through a very a series of, you know, happenstance meetings, she ends up being getting involved with the partisans. And that's where I did some research about women who became known as staffette. And if you were a staffette, you could be sort of a runner for you know, undercover, you know, plans or even weapons and things. And of course, many women actually, I didn't know this either. I found out in my research that there were many Italian women also just literally as fighters in the partisans, which is not something that got passed down in history and is starting to come out more now. And you look at the pictures, you see them carrying guns. But Nicola doesn't get involved in that way, but she does get involved in the staffetta sort of courier kind of thing. And that leads her into all sorts of danger and close calls and, you know, I don't want to give away too much. And so that's kind of where the book goes. And if you know about my mom, as you know, about the war bride, I don't want to give away any endings, but that's kind of where we're heading to with the book.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I've done two books, one on research and one about, you know, my banking career. And I'd love to be able to do a historical fiction, but I'm having trouble, like, you know, building the characters like you just described and things like that. But I have an interesting story with my fourth great grandmother, who was the Duchess of Capricotta in Molise. And she left the family with a French soldier, French officer, probably the late 1700s or something like that. And then she came back and she supposedly married a doctor. And then after the war, I know she died in Paris in like I think 1812 or 1815 or something like that. But I'd love to do some kind of story like that. But you know, I'm not good enough writer, or I don't know what the right word is, but to be able to build the characters like you just described, you know, that's really cool to be able to do that.
Sure. You know what you got to do is, I don't know if this is good advice, but I just tried to entertain myself and ask myself, what would I want to know about what makes this guy tick, you know, and how would he change if this or that happened to him? And I didn't set out to, you know, I said when I first started, it was I told some friends about my mother's story over dinner a few years ago. And the wife said, oh, that's a hot genre if you write a historical fiction about, you know, romance there in Italy. And I said, geez, you know what? I didn't. You know, I didn't put any pressure on myself. Let me just go home and just see what happens. And little by little, just like I said, I had the bare bones of it because of my mother's story. And I just kind of filled it in with this whole thing of just entertain yourself, Arne, and don't try to think you have to write a book or anything. And it led me down the road of some research, you know, ask some relatives, and it just started going. You know, so if you take it from there, you never know where you might end up there, Bob, because you should try it.
Yeah, maybe I should try it, or just, you know, just start writing things slowly. So how old was your mom when the war was going?
She was probably around that. Let's see, my father was probably 30 and she was 20. So yeah, right around the age of the Nicola, our protagonist.
Yeah. You know, my oldest uncle from my mother's family, they went through the war, but they were in Tirito Bari. They used to see the port get bombed, but they weren't close enough to get hit. But they used to run into the fields, and so So where did they all go when this bombing was going on? Did they just go underground? Did they try to go up the hill, or where'd they go?
There were bomb shelters that had been the basements of the municipal buildings here and there, and the sirens would go, they would tell me the sirens would go off, and they if they were in the city. But they were so, they called it high altitude precision bombing, the Americans. When I and the I looked in my research, and it, or whatever, it's definitely not precision, because they ended up all over the place, in the city, and blew up so many folks' houses, matter of fact, I was reading another book about some fellow who his family went through a similar thing down towards Naples, and he mentions in his book the stream of people coming from other places, and he mentions Livorno, that had people had been bombed, a lot of people had to leave. Matter of fact, and I didn't talk to my mom about this. In my research, I found that they created what was called a black zone, and I even saw pictures of it on, Google Images. The sign "Achtung," and it'll be written in German, but then the bottom will be written in Italian, and it would say, "Anyone beyond this point will be shot on sight." And so they kind of cordoned off, so to speak, a large section of the city. So those folks just went out to the countryside, and whomever would take them in.
That's something, and so your dad gets there, and I forget if you mentioned, you may have mentioned it already, but if you didn't, so it, how exactly did they meet, and under what circumstances?
Well, he took ill, and he was in the, infirmary or whatever there, because they started making a base there in Livorno, and the rest, as they moved on, I guess, they would establish bases. Camp Derby, it's called now. It's still there. And so he was sick, and then he ended up staying there and being stationed there. And my mom's aunt who lived with her would got a job there, as many of the Italian girls did, at the base. Whatever their jobs were, cleaning, cooking, serving, whatever. And when my dad, part of his one of his duties was with the Jeep to drive home my mom's aunt, but when who was close to my mom's age. And when he would do that, he would see my mom, and I don't know the details of how they struck up a romance, but eventually they did.
Boy, that's a great job in the war zone.
Volunteer for it.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, my cousin got off the plane in Vietnam, and they asked who knows how to cook. He raised his hand. And then they told him, we'll go over here and make this or something. He said, I don't know how to do that. And the sergeant said, you know how to cook. He said, I figured it was better than getting shot at in the jungle. The sergeant laughed and he said, "You know what? You're smarter than anybody else I have here." And they taught him how to cook. He spent a year in the officer's mess in Saigon.
Well, my father, they knew he was a baker. Matter of fact, that was he was a tech, a sergeant T, with a little T tech, for running the bakers and making all the bread for the whole base. But it's funny because the guy in the book, Tony, I named him after my father also. The Tony in the book, he's a fighting soldier and gets wounded, and he's there in Livorno in the hospital, but on the base. But the it's kind of a catch-22 sort of thing, if you remember that book or that movie. The commander, he ends up starting to cook personal dinners for the commander, gnocchi alla carbonara, and the commander says he won't sign off on him being okay now that he's healed his shoulder, because he doesn't want to let him go. And Tony's like, he's feeling very guilty because he's my brothers are still fighting, and I'm here making dinner for the CO.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. My uncle, he enlisted in the army, and he was blind in one eye. So when they gave him the eye chart test, and he read it, and then they said switch, and he switched hands but not eyes, and he read the chart with the same eye. So when he was trying to shoot, he was looking down the barrel with the wrong eye. And they said, "No, you have to look that way." I said, "I can't see out of that eye." So they were going to discharge him, and then they found out since he was fluent in Italian, they sent him to North Africa to guard Italian prisoners. And he would eat with the Italian prisoners because they were getting pasta, and the Americans were getting stuff in cans. So he used to go eat with the Italians. and bonded with them until till after the war. Yeah, some really interesting stories out of well, I guess all wars, I suppose. So what do you teach?
Oh, I
Curious.
teach. Funny that I teach U.S. history, so I do teach the war, and but I have a background in law, so I also teach a criminal law class and a civil law class, and I coach the mock trial team.
Oh, cool. Ah, that's neat. That's neat. I always liked history. That was my favorite subject. I couldn't do math, so I had to find something that was, and my English was crap. So history was my thing too. Yeah, I enjoyed history. And that's why I think I fell kind of into doing all this genealogy stuff, because it's history, right?
And it's fascinating too.
So I have to ask you, as a history teacher, when we were growing up, we covered, but it was like, I'm 73, so now there's another 63 years added on to history classes. How do you guys cope with all of that stuff?
That's been an issue with the curriculum. We've had to pare it back. We've moved, I used to teach from Native Americans in Columbus all the way up to present day. Now I start after the Civil War at Reconstruction, and they've moved that the prior years down to the middle school before they get to me. So yeah, you're right. And every year, I mean, just in the past 20 years with the post 9/11 and the wars in Iraq, I mean, that's a whole month of studies, wars in Iraq and Iran, I mean, Afghanistan, and so you're absolutely right. It gets harder. And again, people a lot of times say, "Oh, you're a history teacher," and they start asking me these questions, and I'm like, I didn't go to school for history. I was an economics major and a lawyer in a prior life. So I teach a very sort of survey course in American history. So there's a lot of folks out there that are history buffs that know a lot more of the details than I do.
Well, yeah, and through this thing, I've looked back on certain Italian things, and like I have a blog with the list of Italian Medal of Honor winners, which is fascinating in and of itself. But and you may or may not know this, but I was shocked to find that there were seven Italians at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, and the one survivor was an Italian. Giovanni Martini, who's used the name John Martin in America, and he was the bugler, and Custis sent him to go tell the other general, the other colonel, what was going on, and he was the only guy who survived the 7th Cavalry attack because he wasn't there.
Wow, did not know that.
Yeah, look
Very
him up. It's a really interesting story, and he later became a I think he worked in the, if I remember correctly, he worked in the subways in New York City, or he eventually wound up in New York City. And a fascinating story also, because he was an orphan in Italy. He was left in the wheel eventually, originally.
what was he?
He was left in the wheel. In Italy they have those, in the, well, I don't know how far back it goes, but it was pretty recent still. They would have a little door in the church, and you could put the baby in it, and then you would
Left.
turn it. Yeah.
Definitely heard of that. So, but now I got the connection. Left in the wheel. The yeah,
Yeah.
right.
Yeah. And he did eventually, find his father, but he didn't want to have anything to do with him, because he was left of an orphan. But what they used to do is they would leave, like pin a ribbon or a medal or something on the child, so that if they ever wanted to come back, they could say, "I'm the mother or I'm the father who left the child with the yellow ribbon or whatever." Really interesting stuff. The way, a little weird to leave a child in the door like that, but I guess that's the way they did it,
You reminded me of one of the stories I found when I was researching there in Livorno. The Americans, trying to dislodge the Germans, they hit, or it might have been the British, they hit an orphanage there, and about 40 kids were killed. That's one of the biggest tragedies there in Livorno during the war. And because the nun and the nuns ran it, and they would take in, that's where they would get the kids just dropped off.
Well, it's like Monte Cassino. They bombed it for nothing. The other interesting story I heard about the South, which I didn't know, with somebody that I interviewed, that Mussolini moved a lot of the dissidents to, he didn't put them in prison per se, but he removed them to towns in the South. And there were whole towns of, like, partisans that lived, they just lived there until after the war. For years, they lived there. But they had to stay there, but the way the guy explained it was there were no fences or walls or anything like that. They just knew that they had to stay there, and that's where they stayed.
That's they're a bunch of partisans, almost like he's creating a brigade for them. It's funny if they wanted to break out of there,
My friend Andy's mom, the one who I told you was the English war bride, she was actually in the square when they did away with Mussolini.
that's quite a scene.
And he's an interesting character because had he not done all of this crazy stuff with Hitler and all of this fascist stuff, he actually got things working in Italy.
That's what they say, they say, yeah. And he, yeah, it's too bad, Ethiopia and those things, it's too bad that he went and did those things too. Yeah. And Hitler, you're right. Yeah, I haven't researched a lot about Mussolini. I have read about, and I do for my students show the comparison, his rise to power and Hitler. And I tell them, Mussolini's the original,
That's right.
Hitler got his playbook from Mussolini. I teach them, but
People don't realize that. People don't know that Mussolini was the original fascist and
he was Hitler's hero. He was Hitler looked up to him. Yeah.
yeah, because he was at, well, I don't know if ahead of the curve is the right terminology, but that's the way it was. But he was building a lot, and it's still some stuff. When we were there the last time, they were showing us some of the buildings in Bari. Fantastic buildings that he built, and all that Art Deco stuff and everything like that. I mean, it's amazing, the things that he was having erected. But he started that goofy war in Ethiopia for some strange reason, and that was kind of the beginning of the downfall, I guess. I want to ask you, did you went back every year when you were a kid?
Quite every year, maybe every other year, 2, 3 years. I probably ended up a total of 5 or 6 times going back. And after I was 19, I hadn't gone back. And about 5 years ago, I went back again. And it was totally different. I thought I was going to find, that quaint Italy, that kid with the Cinquecentos driving all around, and the little three-wheel sort of motorcycle vehicles that, I don't know if you've ever seen those. They kind of have a cab, and then they have a little bit of a bed on them, and and the ambulances dee doo dee doo. I thought I was going to see all that again, and it's so Western. I don't say Westernized; they are in the West, but I mean so Americanized and modern, and everybody's on their phones and everything. Supermarkets, and it's total. It's not the same.
Well, Livorno, the cruise ships go into there, right?
Yes, cruise ships do stop in there. Yes, because yeah, it's pretty. It's a beautiful little place actually to visit because. They got a canal going through Livorno, and it they call it something they call it Little Venice sometimes because beautiful turquoise canal with all the little wooden boats. That's almost the same. The boats aren't quite all wooden, but there's still a few of them. And it's a the canal is set well down from street level, so there's this beautiful old stone walls that line it, and it winds its way through the city. And they have stone steps that go down every once in a while on a corner that you could go down to the canal. So I was always fascinated by the canal when I was a kid, and just going down there and wondering what's down there in that deep underneath that water. When I was a little kid, I was afraid to fall into it because it's beautiful and green, kind of like a turquoise or a emerald. But it's opaque, as a canal, and I always wondered what went on underneath that water.
Well, things were bigger when we were kids, right? You go places back from your childhood and you went, boy, I thought that was a lot bigger than I remember.
My neighborhood, yeah, here in Hamden too. I had the same experience.
Well, that no, I haven't been there. We've been to Rome, of course, and we went to, some of the hometowns, but we said the next if If we go next year, we've never been to the Pisa or Florence or Venice or those places. We've mostly been in the South, so we said we have to visit the real cultural places this time. I've been to Milan, would work, but didn't get to see, that much. Walk past the Opera House, saw the Duomo, and went to work,
Right there, or no, Pisa's right up the road, half an hour probably, and then you go inland a little ways, and you've got Arezzo and all this. Yeah, so you could see a lot of places right around there.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's what they say. So we'll have to think about that. How about your kids? What did they think when they went back?
They didn't go back with me. I ended up going back without them, because they're adults and doing their own thing. But I brought them back pictures. I'd love, that's what we talk about sometimes, is the whole bunch of us going back.
You
My wife.
should. We went with our two our kids are young because they were adopted, and so we were in our 40s, and I knew my son would like it because he likes history and museums and all that kind of stuff. My daughter I wasn't so sure about, but no, she they really really enjoyed it. They were, I guess, 26 and 25 when we went, but they really really had a good time doing it. So you'll have to drag them back there.
That's what we've been talking about. Maybe find a little villa there, because they do that. They rent out villas when you bring a whole family and everybody splits it, and it's not too bad as far as economically speaking. So hopefully we will.
Well, and the food and the rest, we found the restaurants to be really reasonable over there. Of course, you don't have to tip. There's no tax, there's no tip. So, you're just paying for the meal, which makes it a lot better. And most of the places, unless you're in a really, really big city, like you said, the B&Bs or the villas and stuff, they're really pretty reasonable compared to here. The biggest part is the plane fare, because that just keeps going up and up and up.
Exactly.
So before we go, where can people find the book?
It's on Amazon, and if you search Nicola's story, I have a little picture of the book I put on your website. We could put it up again, but yeah, you just go on Amazon and search Nicola's story, and it'll pop up. It's only $9.99.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's really reasonable. And yeah, I'll put all the links up there and all of that, so people could, find it easy. Are you gonna write another one? Or are you done?
But all these people keep calling me up, thing about writing. It's all sorts of folks, not just friends and family, but friends of friends and colleagues of friends. It's like these ripples that went out. Now they're bouncing back, and all these folks are contacting me, and that's just been so rewarding and so nice. And a lot of them, they all keep saying, "We want a sequel. We want to know what happens to her." So I need a little break.
I guess you're gonna have to do it then. All right, well, thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Sure, it was a great pleasure, Bob, speaking with you. I enjoyed it.